So let's read together then 2 Kings chapter 10, verses 1 through 17. In this first half of 2 Kings 10, we have the record of King Jehu's elimination of everyone associated with the dynasty of Ahab. 2 Kings chapter 10, beginning at verse 1. Now Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria. And Jehu wrote letters and sent them to Samaria, to the rulers of Jezreel, to the elders, and to those who reared Ahab's sons, saying, Now as soon as this letter comes to you, since your master's sons are with you, and you have chariots and horses, a fortified city also, and weapons, choose the best qualified of your master's sons. Set him on his father's throne, and fight for your master's house. But they were exceedingly afraid and said, Look, two kings could not stand up to him. How then can we stand? And he who was in charge of the house, and he who was in charge of the city, the elders also, and those who reared the sons, sent to Jehu, saying, We are your servants. We will do all you tell us, but we will not make anyone king. Do what is good in your sight. Then he wrote a second letter to them, saying, If you are for me, and if you will obey my voice, take the heads of the men, your master's sons, and come to me at Jezreel by this time tomorrow. Now the king's sons, 70 persons, were with the great men of the city who were rearing them. So it was, when the letter came to them, that they took the king's sons and slaughtered 70 persons, put their heads in baskets, and sent them to him at Jezreel. Then a messenger came and told him, saying, They have brought the heads of the king's sons. And he said, Lay them in two heaps at the entrance of the gate until morning. So it was in the morning that he went out and stood and said to all the people, You are righteous. Indeed, I conspired against my master and killed him. But who killed all these? Know now that nothing shall fall to the earth of the word of the Lord, which the Lord spoke concerning the house of Ahab. For the Lord has done what he spoke by his servant Elijah. So Jehu killed all who remained of the house of Ahab in Jezreel, and all his great men, and his close acquaintances, and his priests, until he left none remaining. And he arose and departed and went to Samaria. On the way, at Beth Eked of the shepherds, Jehu met with the brothers of Ahaziah, king of Judah, and said, Who are you? And they answered, We are the brothers of Ahaziah. We have come down to greet the sons of the king and the sons of the queen mother. And he said, Take them alive. So they took them alive and killed them at the well of Beth Eked, 42 men, and he left none of them. Now when he departed from there, he met Jehonadab, the son of Rechab, coming to meet him. And he greeted him and said to him, Is your heart right as my heart is toward your heart? And Jehonadab answered, It is. Jehu said, If it is, give me your hand. So he gave him his hand, and he took him up to him into the chariot. Then he said, Come with me and see my zeal for the Lord. So they had him ride in his chariot. And when he came to Samaria, he killed all who remained to Ahab in Samaria, till he had destroyed them, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke to Elijah. First of all, let's look at some background notes. The prophet Elijah had predicted the downfall of the dynasty of King Ahab. God used King Jehu to accomplish his purpose of removing the house of Ahab. In 2 Kings chapter 9, Ahab's son King Jehoram was killed along with the wicked queen mother Jezebel, all by the hand of Jehu. And now here in chapter 10, Jehu makes his move to fully establish his new dynasty and remove any possible claims to the throne by remnants of Ahab's line. We read that Jehu forced the hands of the officials and elders in Israel and had them kill all 70 sons of Ahab and send their heads in baskets to Jezreel and had them piled up in two heaps outside the gate of Jezreel. Kind of gruesome, isn't it? In verse 13, we read that when Jehu was on his way to the capital city of Samaria, he met 42 brothers or relatives of King Ahaziah of Judah. So what did Jehu do? He killed them too. Why? Why kill these 42 brothers or relatives of King Ahaziah of Judah? Well, King Ahaziah of Judah was a grandson of King Ahab through his mother Athaliah. In 2 Kings chapter 9, we read that Jehu killed King Ahaziah of Judah along with King Jehoram of Israel. And now here in chapter 10, he kills 42 more possible rivals to the throne. And then finally, we read in verse 17, "And when Jehu came to Samaria, he killed all who remained to Ahab in Samaria, till he had destroyed them, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke to Elijah." Doctrinal point number one, religious zeal may have a hidden agenda. Religious zeal may have a hidden agenda. All this killing that Jehu was doing, he was doing in the name of the Lord. It was done with religious zeal. This is Jehu speaking. "Know now that nothing shall fall to the earth of the word of the Lord, which the Lord spoke concerning the house of Ahab." And look what Jehu says to this man, Jehonadab, in verse 16. "Come with me and see my zeal for the Lord." Jehonadab, or Jonadab, as he's also known, was the founder of a strict conservative sect within Israel. They were still around, by the way, in Jeremiah's time, a couple hundred years later. You read about them in Jeremiah chapter 35. Now, the fact that Jehonadab joined Jehu in his chariot shows that Jehonadab approved of what Jehu was doing to rid the northern kingdom of the wicked dynasty of Ahab. So the point here is there's no doubt that King Jehu had a lot of religious zeal. But religious zeal may have a hidden agenda. What was the bottom line for Jehu? Was it to serve the Lord and turn the northern kingdom of Israel back to the Lord? No. As we follow the record of Jehu, we see that he had a hidden agenda. He was out to advance his own political career. "What's in it for Jehu?" was his standard operating procedure, inviting Jehonadab to ride in his chariot. That was all part of his political agenda as well. Why not have people see Jehonadab riding with Jehu? That would be like having the religious right and moral majority on your side. Everybody thinks you're doing all of this for the Lord and to turn Israel back to the Lord. Jehu had zeal without the Spirit. Jehu was an instrument of God, but not a servant of God. Jehu is a glaring example of the biblical truth that religious zeal may have a hidden agenda. Is it possible that your religious zeal has a hidden agenda? Why do you always want to lead a Bible study? Why do you volunteer to head up that special ministry committee? Why do you really want to be a spiritual leader? Is there a possible secret agenda? Do we really want to serve the Lord, or do we want control? We want power. We want the limelight. We want to run the show. Let's examine our hearts. Religious zeal can have a secret agenda. Doctrinal point number two, religious zeal can go too far. Religious zeal can go too far. Turn, if you will, to Hosea chapter 1 and verse 4. Hosea prophesied in the northern kingdom of Israel about 100 years after Jehu's time. In Hosea chapter 1 and verse 4, God said through the prophet Hosea, "For in a little while I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu." It's quite obvious here that God was not pleased with something about Jehu's executions there in Jezreel. And yet we've just read back here in 2 Kings 10 verse 17 that when Jehu came to Samaria, he killed all who remained to Ahab in Samaria till he had destroyed them according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke to Elijah. How do you harmonize these two scriptures? Do you see the problem? I think the answer is in verse 11 of our chapter. Jehu went too far. 2 Kings chapter 10 and verse 11. "So Jehu killed all who remained of the house of Ahab in Jezreel, and all his great men and all his close acquaintances and his priests, until he left him none remaining. God had not commissioned Jehu to kill off anyone he wanted, only the line of Ahab. Jehu went too far in his zeal. And the fact that Jehu used gruesome Assyrian methods, such as cutting off the heads and piling them up in two heaps at the gate of the city, that may also be included in God's rebuke here in Hosea chapter 1 and verse 4. In any case, religious zeal can go too far. Religious zeal can go too far today. You know, I know Christians who have been excommunicated for minor doctrinal differences by overzealous church leaders. These poor Christians were put out not because they were off on the personal work of Christ or some other critical doctrine. No, it was for some minor doctrinal difference or for fellowshipping with believers from a different denomination. Religious zeal can go too far. Let's make sure our religious zeal is not misdirected. Again, I know Christian young people who have left the church because some overzealous older Christian told them that they had to do this or do that. Religious zeal can go too far. Well, what about practical application, or more practical application, shall we say? Let's approve the programs of unbelievers when they are in line with the Word of God. Let's approve the programs of unbelievers when they are in line with the Word of God. Now, where do we see that lesson taught here? We see it in the actions of Jehonadab, or Jonadab, here in verse 15. Jehonadab certainly knew that Jehu wasn't a God-fearing man. And Jehonadab certainly knew that Jehu wasn't a believer committed to the Lord. But Jehonadab, or Jonadab, approved the program of Jehu because it was in line with the Word of God. That is, Jehu's program was to end the wicked dynasty of Ahab. And Jonadab approved it because it was in line with the Word of God. And Jehu's program also included a purge of Baal worship that we'll read in the second half of 2 Kings 10. And Jonadab approved it because it was in line with the Word of God. Let's approve the programs of unbelievers when they are in line with the Word of God. Some examples. You know, we can approve the programs of non-Christian organizations that are involved in disaster relief and helping the poor, humanitarian efforts, because that's in line with the Word of God. We certainly can approve the programs of non-Christian organizations that are against abortion and for family values, because that's in line with the Word of God. We can approve their programs in as much as they are in line with the Word of God. We may not approve of everything they say, and certainly the bulk of our time should be spent in evangelizing the unbelievers. But having said that, let's approve the programs of unbelievers when they are in line with the Word of God.